You walk out into that stadium feeling like a gladiator, and everyone's, you know, screaming your name and stampeding in the stands, and it is really scary. And I definitely took a while to get used to that feeling. I even had coaches in development that told me, you know, you're a lump of lard, was one of the things I got described as a 14-year-old. I'm a strong-willed person, but you tell a 14-year-old girl that enough times and it does create some problems. I don't think people lie on their deathbeds and ask for their trophies and their medals. They ask for their loved ones, and I've just reflected on it quite a lot recently, and I think what matters most to people is their connections and their relationships, not always the goals that they've achieved in their life.
Procrastination is the thief of time is a proverb that has no place in the lexicon of today's guest. Olympian Dr. Carenza Bryson balances multiple concurrent challenges. Alongside her medical career, she has ambitions of securing an Olympic medal in Los Angeles and is also pursuing her ambitions in the army as a reservist. For most of us, this feels a lot, but listening to Carenza's powerful wisdom makes it sound completely achievable. Carenza has chosen an unconventional path that is not without sacrifice, but she is remarkably philosophical about this. Above all, her thoughtful analysis is matched by an ingrained commitment to work hard for what she wants. I'm Lindsay McDuff, the Culture Colonel, and this is my conversation with Carenza. Dr. Carenza Bryson, modern pentathlete, Olympian, army officer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
Can you just talk a bit about modern pentathlon? I think any army officer who has studied history ought to know what modern pentathlon is, but for the vast majority of people, I suspect they may not know.
Yes, so modern pentathlon originates around a cavalry officer and the kind of things they would have to do to travel and to send a message. So you would ride your horse until your horse couldn't go any further, and then you would run, and if you came across any rivers or lakes, you would swim across them, and you'd defend yourself using your rifle or your pistol until you run out of ammunition, and then you would use your sword. So that's the five sports, and it was kind of a way of life, and at some point they decided to make it into a sport to see who was the best at all of them together. Given that a lot of us have strengths and weaknesses in all of them, it's about trying to be a good all-rounder.
How did you get into modern pentathlon?
So I did a lot of horse riding as a youngster. My mum is a horse riding instructor, so it was very natural for me to learn how to horse ride before I could run. Yeah, I had absolutely the best childhood growing up around ponies a lot of the time. And in pony club, you can do tetrathlon, which is everything apart from the fencing. They're meant to be like a fun weekend thing, and my parents took me around to them all, and I was probably a little bit too competitive compared to the other 8-year-olds. That's how I kind of learned about that fighting spirit and that competitive nature that I had. And I went to a demonstration evening ran by Heather Fell, who's a Olympic silver medalist, and she bought her silver medal and all her Olympic fencing kit, and I'd never seen a fencing épée before, and she let me put on all her kit and her GB mask, try it out and see her medal and hear her story. And I think I was 10 or 11, and that was the day that I decided that I was going to become an Olympian. I was going to give it my best shot anyway, because she's got a really inspiring story. She's from my area. So yeah, I was that young when I decided that I wanted to do that.
And that drive came from that one unexpected meeting.
I think I've always had drive and passion for a lot of things that I do in my life, but I think that really sparked a flame and helped me direct that drive into a real goal. Where I was a bit of a nightmare kid, I think, running around doing everything, tiring my parents out. I was quite naughty. Like you hear a lot of elite athletes, you hear stories of them being similar when they were younger, because it's about trying to direct that passion into something.
In the coming years that you were training and focusing on going to the Olympics, did you think about her often to encourage you to remember what it was you were doing? Or was it just that one meeting and then you knew? What was it that made you continue with that determination?
I didn't really see her much in a long time. She now does a little bit of commentating on the sport, but for years I didn't. So yeah, it was just that one meeting that sparked that goal. How I continued on it was a really supportive family and great friends around me, and my support network down in Plymouth where I went to school and went to university was just amazing. So that allowed me to carry on. Yeah, I think when I've just decided I want something, I will just keep going until I've got it. There were times where there was kind of ups and downs and motivation, as there is with everyone. It's only human to have that. But just remembering the end goal and wanting something enough that you kind of fight through those rough patches and those really hard days. And trust me, there was a lot of hard days with balancing medical school and army commitments as well. But just kind of keeping that hope that one day it'll all be worth it.
And you've mentioned that you have completed your medical studies as well, and you're also in the army, and you're juggling a whole load of things to achieve all of those things. How do you manage all of it?
I think because I've done pentathlon since I was quite young, and I was doing loads and loads of sports before that, I think I've just learned to be a really busy person from a young age. It's just kind of my routine. It's just how I like to live my life. When I'm not busy, I just get bored and I somehow fill my time with other things. All through school, I was studying for GCSEs and A-levels. I was doing lots of training, and so that transferred over and I learned those skills through trial and error and had almost perfected how I can cope with so much by the time I was 18. So moving into medical school, where it ups the level of revision you have to do, the amount of studying, the difficulty of what I was learning and the responsibility, and then adding in army reserves, just meant that it all got a bit harder, but I just still use those skills. And it's the skills that, you know, a lot of people talk about, really good time management. I had to be efficient in everything I did. There was no time to procrastinate. I would think of it as I need to pass medical school, because medical school is not a first or a 2-1. It's pass, you're good enough to go be a doctor and treat people, or you're not good enough to be a doctor. So for me, it was about how much revising can I do to just about get through my medical school exams and not fail anything. But I also was not very fussed about being the top in my year, because if I was the top in my year, I was spending all my time in the library and wasn't able to train. So it was this constant balancing act of, oh, I did a little bit too well in that exam. I need to drop a revision session and do an extra training session, because then I'm more likely to be able to get a medal at World Championships or whatever it was that year. That's kind of exactly the situation I had last year. I graduated in June 23, and on the day I found out about my medical school results was the day that I won a World Cup. Then later on in the season, I got a bronze medal at World Championships off the back of medical school. So I feel like in that year, I'd balanced it really well, because I'd done well enough in all my exams and was really quite pleasantly surprised, and had managed to kind of get everything right on the training side of things and the lead up to all the big championships. So it's tough, and it has taken me absolutely years to learn how to best manage that.
And this is in the lead up to the Olympics. So you graduated in 23, and so you had a year then where at least you weren't having to study.
It makes such a difference. Going down to pretty much focusing on one thing. So I'm in 165 Porter Maritime Regiment in Plymouth. And they have been incredibly supportive of this Olympic dream and just encouraged me at every single step of the way. They let me drop back on a few of my responsibilities, and I did some more stuff that was more remote work that I could do from Bath. And my first job as a doctor was set to start August 23 in the Royal United Hospital in Bath. And I sent an email to them asking whether I could defer, which is not really something you hear people doing very much. Old people try to, but it doesn't get allowed. But the team there has been amazingly supportive and let me defer by not only a year, but a year and 4 months, so that I didn't have to come straight back from the games and go straight into working as a junior doctor, which I think has been really important for me now that I'm in that phase. They've been absolutely amazing in the support.
And routinely, the Olympics is a 4-year cycle, but this last Olympics was a 3-year cycle.
Yeah.
You had this run up to the Olympics and you had a really good European Championships. And so you were all set and you were doing amazingly well in the semifinals. Your plan was clearly to go and medal. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, so I had had the best season I've ever had in my whole life. I won another World Cup. I got another medal at one of the World Cups and then won European Championships. So I'd worked out that in the last 18 months, out of 5 competitions, I'd been on the podium 4 times. And I just had a cracking season and really consistent, hitting all my marks, and going into the games was feeling the fittest I've ever felt. But the difficulty with the Olympics is nothing is quite like the Olympics. I have never been to the games. The last time I went to watch the games was in 2012 when I was 13. You can't prepare for it. You just can't. I was sitting down with my psychologist beforehand trying to do some exercises to get ready for the noise of the crowd, to get ready for the stuff that the commentators say. I thought I was prepared, and you walk out into that stadium feeling like a gladiator, and everyone's, you know, screaming your name and stampeding in the stands, and it is really scary. And I definitely took a while to get used to that feeling. And once I'd settled into it, I competed a lot better, but I was kind of on the off foot because at the start I had quite a rough beginning to the competition, so there was only so much I could pull back. But I fought through to the end, and there are some bits of the comp that I'm really happy with, but there were some bits that just how different it was to anything else I've done before. It's hard to not let that affect your mindset.
Mm.
But the Olympic experience was absolutely incredible. Being part of Team GB, the culture and community that Team GB has as a unit is amazing. And just being able to be shoulder to shoulder with all these incredible Olympians that you've watched on the TV and fangirling over them. And you can see them being like, you're an Olympian as well. Can you relax? It was just amazing. The village experience and the prep camp that we had before, and just the crowds were amazing. It was just trying to get used to them. Almost felt like a home Olympics as well, actually, because it was just Paris. A lot of Brits crossed over and came and watched. So I was pleasantly surprised with how many Union Jacks there were all over the place. So it was a really, really special experience.
And it was the first Olympics where there was gender parity as well.
Mm.
It was also probably the only Olympics where you stood for hours on the boat in the rain at the opening ceremony. Were you on that boat?
No, I wasn't on that boat, but we've spoken to some of the athletes that were. And yeah, I think they were all saying that they were very cold and quite wet and had sore feet by the end of it, which isn't the best preparation, really, is it, for the biggest race of your life? We went to the closing ceremony instead, where we got to sit down in the middle of the stadium, which was much nicer.
I mean, your plan was to medal, and then I think it was to focus on your medical career. Is that right?
So my plan was, having medaled in the season before, to get a medal. I probably wouldn't have been fussy what colour that medal was. I think an Olympic medal is amazing, and that's kind of been my dream. I came ninth in the end, qualified for the final, which was a bit of a fight in itself, did well in the semi-final, so was pleased with that. But because I did come ninth, I don't really feel like I can leave my career like that now, because it's not representative of me as an athlete and what I can do. I just don't think it would be very Carenza Bryson to leave it like that. So I had some time out to decompress after the games, and went and spent some time with my partner and my family, and have decided that I'd like to go for another Olympic cycle now. So LA 28 is my next goal. Even just to give myself another shot, if I don't medal, then at least I can say that I've tried, and I would hopefully be a double Olympian as well, which sounds quite cool.
So you're now going to go back to using all those well-learnt juggling talents that you have.
I like to say balancing. Yeah. It's just trying to keep all the balls in the air without dropping any. My life during medical school often looked like getting up at 5:36, doing a 2-hour training session, having breakfast in the car driving to the hospital, changing into scrubs somewhere in that as well, working then as a medical student where you'd be shadowing the junior doctors and learning from them. That would be kind of like 9 till 4, 9 till 5. Then I would immediately put my running stuff on and go out for a run. Derriford Hospital, where I was based most of the time, is right next to the moors. So I would just quite do a 5-minute drive and do something on the moor run-wise. Then I would be going back to like my home, quickly grabbing some dinner. Sometimes that would be dinner in the car out of a Tupperware. And then I would do another training session from 8 till 10 in the evening. So it would just be chaotic. And the rest period I had would be the time I had in the hospital, which where I'd be running around after patients all day on my feet, like not recovering at all. And then you compare that to the year I've just had, where I've been a full-time athlete, where you go and train and then you come back and have a nap and eat, and then you go and train again and then you eat like a perfectly prepared meal that you've had hours to do. And it's just so different being a full-time athlete and trying to juggle sport and a career.
I mean, I'm worn out just listening to what your daily routine is, but in the military world, people talk about the post-command blues. It's not a recognised medical condition, but in your world, you have, I think, the post-Olympic blues. Is that a real thing?
Yeah, a lot of Olympians talk about it. I had a conversation with an Olympian about 8 years ago about it, and I was thinking, is that really a thing? And now I've done it, it definitely is. And I would consider myself a really positive person, always likes to have a really positive outlook on life. I got back from the Games. First of all, I got really ill because your immune system is like on absolute fire when you're at the Games because you're just fighting everything. You've got really high cortisol levels and adrenaline, and you get back, and as you say, it's very similar to when people get back from tour and their body just goes, okay, I can relax, and everything just crashes. I had no immunity. I got tonsillitis, which turned into like full kind of neck throat infection. I was hospitalized for 3 days on all sorts of drugs and morphine. It was very funny because I was going to the nurses, you know, I was at the Olympics 7 days ago, and they were going, yeah, sure. And then one of the nurses searched my name and was like, oh my goodness, she was at the Olympics. And they were going, she's not lying, she's not crazy. So yeah, that was quite an Olympic come down, it has to be said. But it's really hard having that shift in identity, especially with, I found with me, because I've got multiple hats, being my army hat, my sport hat, and my medicine. And at different times of my life, I'm having to shift my focus from one to the other. And I've just had a year and a half, really, of really focusing on that sport, and the other two sitting on the back burner a little bit more. And I've absolutely loved it. It's been an incredible year for me. And now that's over, I have to accept that this year is over. And I'm going to have to shift back to that medicine for a bit, which is amazing. And I do love practicing medicine because you've got the other side to it that you never see in sport, which is the, you know, you're really caring for people and you're really making a difference to other people's lives. But it is just so different. And I've quite enjoyed having the break from the stress of medicine. And it's a really hard career. So it's kind of the impending doom for me of, I know what's coming now, of trying to do that medical career, but also now that I've decided to go on for LA, I need to work out how I'm going to balance training around that again. So it's another challenge that's going to be coming up for me, and I'm sure I'll find a way, and we'll work through it with my friends and family and everything there to support me. And I have the most amazing partner as well, who supports me through all of this. But it is a tough shift in identity, I think, and that's what I've struggled with a little bit over the last few months.
You're an army reservist and you're in the logistic corps at the moment, but you're a medical doctor, and surely the regular army needs medical doctors.
Yeah, so I really wanted to join a medical reserve unit when I was at university. However, they don't really have positions for medical students or junior doctors. So it's something that I'm looking at. I would really love to join the regulars. And that's kind of like in the pipeline for the next 2 or 3 years. I'm going to try and apply and transfer over, because at the moment they're very different careers. I mean, I'm a maritime troop commander. And, you know, my trade isn't about boats. My trade is being a doctor. So if I can combine them, which has always been the long-term plan, that would be ideal. But my reserve regiment at the moment have been really, really supportive. And I'm kind of doing as much as I can with those guys and that kind of army family that I've got there. And they've supported me so much in this lead into the Games. And now I'm trying to kind of pay that back and help them with lots of stuff as well, recruitment, engagement. Yeah, so the long-term goal is to be a regular army officer as a doctor, and that can be kind of the career that I move into as well and do full-time, hopefully for a long career after retiring as an athlete.
But before you actually start your next stage of your medical career, you turned up here with a rucksack and you're heading off on your travels.
Yeah, so I didn't book a holiday initially, just because they say that often if you medal, you might get invited on chat shows and go to movie premieres and have all the fun stuff that you get if you're an Olympic medalist. But obviously, sadly, I didn't get that. So I've booked my holiday slightly later. And yeah, I'm off to Vietnam to do a bit of a gap year, a few weeks by myself, solo traveling down through Vietnam. So I'm really, really excited because this is the last chance I'll get a big holiday in a while with junior doctoring, and then focusing on LA, I won't be taking any big holidays. So I'm really excited.
We can feel the excitement in the room. And when you get back, you're then immersed into both working as a doctor, but also preparing for 2028. Mm. Having done the cycle before, do you think a four-year cycle is going to be easier, and will that work better with your medical career too?
I think it will definitely work better for me this time around, because I do have to focus on the first few years of my medical career in order to get my full GMC license. So I can't delay my foundation year one any longer. So it would be great if I could tick those two foundations. You do two foundation years before you can pick a specialty. It'd be great if I can get those done and then focus on sport again. If it was 3 years, I wouldn't have as much time into LA to prepare. So I think this will be much nicer. The 2 years before the games, at that first bit of the Olympic cycle, is much more relaxed from my experience. That last year into the games is like nothing I've experienced. Everyone is on absolute full speed of competitiveness, and it gets a bit brutal sometimes within the team, and you're all really good friends, so it's kind of difficult when the dynamics start to change a bit, because obviously it's everyone's dream to go to the Olympics and only two of you get to go. So it is tricky managing that and the relationships within the squad. Now the Olympics are over, it's all relaxed a bit for, I imagine it will be about 2 years before everything starts to crank up again.
Quite often with elite sports people, you see the steely determination and commitment in single-mindedly committing to a particular goal. Your other hats, the army and also the medical world, is not like that. How do you manage to move between those different worlds, and do you need to adapt your personality to suit the environment?
Yeah, I really noticed it this year where I was just being a full-time athlete, but it sounds awful saying it, but to be an elite athlete, you do have to be really selfish, because it's about yourself, it's about your performance, it's about what can I do to make myself better. The whole team around you is all geared towards those Olympians. All the support staff are there for that person. Medicine's just not like that at all. And I really like that, because I'm not like that naturally. I'm not selfish, and that side of things is kind of odd to me. The reason why I got into medicine is because I like the thought of making a difference to someone's life, and as cliche as it sounds, really just helping others. Although I'm a bit nervous about going back into medicine now, I'm really looking forward to having that side where I can help other people, because you can't really help other people when you're preparing yourself for the Olympics for 18 months. So yeah, you do have to switch that a bit, trying to keep your empathy while you're being an elite athlete. But in sport, kind of the least empathy you have, the better, because you're not then feeling sorry for your teammates that might not get in, which again is, I guess, something that I struggled with a bit this year, is seeing your friends, really good friends who you've been teammates with for years, not make it. It's really tough. Mm. They're very different careers, so I quite like the contrast, actually.
And with a determination to be an Olympian also comes sacrifice. Mm. How hard is that?
I think a lot of people talk about sacrifice when they talk about being successful in their careers. I never really knew exactly what that meant until this last year, I'd say. Because when you're younger, you sacrifice your social life at university, or not going out clubbing with your friends as much, or being able to meet up with people. And at the time, that was something I was totally happy to sacrifice if it means I'm going to the Olympics. I had no qualms about that at all. And it's only now that I've got some friends who are getting married and going to their weddings, and they've got so many friends. And it has made me reflect a bit in this last kind of 6 months, thinking I have really sacrificed a lot of my social life to be able to achieve what I've achieved. And I think if I'd picked a slightly easier degree rather than being a doctor, I probably would have had more time for it. But I think it's the combination that I've done three pretty difficult things and really not had any spare time, even for just looking after myself, really, let alone trying to meet people and then maintain those relationships. I mean, I'm obviously only a young doctor. I'm starting my career, but I don't think people lie on their deathbeds and ask for their trophies and their medals. They ask for their loved ones. And I've just reflected on it quite a lot recently. And I think what matters most to people is their connections and their relationships, not always the goals that they've achieved in their life. Doesn't mean I regret anything, but it's just something to bear in mind that I maybe wish that I'd had a bit more appreciation of when I was that 12-year-old making the decision that I wanted to go to the games no matter what.
It's remarkably philosophical that you have reflected on this. There are plenty of people who go through their whole life and they don't do any of that kind of analysis. And to be doing it at your age and your stage in life means that you can shape what that future looks like in a conscious way. Can we rewind a bit and talk about growing up and your determination to be an elite sports person with your interest in the medical world? What impact did social media have on you and your perception of what performance looks like as an elite athlete?
I think this is still a massive issue. And when I was growing up and social media was on the rise and people were getting Facebook and Instagram, I definitely think, particularly for women, there was a real expectation of what an elite athlete looks like. And at that time, I remember being told that you needed to be really skinny, very lean, maybe a bit taller than I am. I even had coaches in development that told me, you know, you're a lump of lard was one of the things I got described as a 14-year-old. I'm a strong-willed person, but you tell a 14-year-old girl that enough times and it does create some problems. I'm just lucky I had a support around me that, you know, would reinforce, no, performance doesn't look like anything. It's not a particular body type. Performance is the results that you give on the day and it doesn't matter how you get that done. I did have coaches that were like that and luckily kind of stopped that turning into anything a bit more serious. But I saw a lot of my teammates who were girls and they would spiral off and have issues with weight loss and eating disorders. I think they are addressing it more now. What I really loved seeing coming out of this Olympics was a lot of stuff on social media that said, oh my goodness, all these female athletes are so powerful, they're so strong. They're not thinking, oh, they're so skinny and pretty and slender. It was, no, they are powerful. And I really liked that. I mean, I saw quite a lot of videos on TikTok and Instagram of little girls being like, mommy, I want to look like that. And you're just not looking at the typical athlete. But an athlete can look like absolutely anything. I mean, all sports require different sets of skills, different body types. In just pentathlon, we have loads of different body types because some people come from a swimming background, some people come from a running background. But I think the main message that I was pleased to see come out for me around this topic was that a female athlete doesn't have to look like one thing. You can look however you want.
And the world of work that you're moving into is mostly male-dominated. Is this a conscious decision to go into this world, or is this just how it's happened?
I think it's just maybe to do with how I was raised. I was always raised by my parents to do whatever I wanted with my life. And my dad used to say to me all the time, the world is your oyster. You just have to work hard enough for what you want. There's absolutely no way that my dad treated me any differently to if I had been his firstborn son, for example. It's just me and my sister. They just raised me to think, you know, I can do whatever I want. I've just gone out and pursued things that are traditionally very male-dominated. So modern pentathlon and sport in general is traditionally, modern pentathlon for the females only came in 2000. It was the first Olympic Games that the females were allowed to compete, which was really not that long ago. Military is still very male dominated and medicine traditionally as well. So I kind of didn't do it on purpose, but I find myself pursuing three careers that are, yeah, traditionally very male dominated. And I kind of like that I've done that because I'm, I guess, maybe trying to create a path and show people that not only can you go and do something that might be a bit scary as a female to go into an environment that's very male dominated, but you can also do multiple careers. I mean, I got told quite a lot when I was younger that I don't think you can do all of these. You need to stop something. I remember getting sat down by a tutor in medical school and my grades were still fine, but he was saying, I don't think you can keep this up. You're spreading yourself too thinly. I think you should maybe not do as much sport or something. And I always wonder whether they'd say the same things if it was a very ambitious male or whether it's just what they'd say. I'm not sure, but I do like to tell younger people, but specifically, you know, younger girls, that you don't have to just pursue one thing. You can do whatever you want. You just have to make those sacrifices and work hard enough for them. But don't let people tell you that you can't do it.
Do you have time to relax? And if so, what do you do?
To be honest with you, I don't really have much time to relax. I mean, I'm really looking forward to this holiday because I just really need to switch off, but I'm still getting work emails and stuff because there's things I need to prepare for starting my job in end of November. But no, it will be a proper time for me to switch off. And I imagine I won't get much time to relax when I'm working as a junior doctor and trying to train. But in this year I've had as a full-time athlete, I have had more time to switch off, which has been really important in recovery. I do some painting in my free time. Yeah, I like to try and paint things for my friends and family.
Landscapes or portraits?
A bit of everything. I haven't really found my specialty yet, mostly because I haven't had the time to properly figure out where my niche is. But yeah, I've done quite a lot of seascapes and painting animals. I like to spend a lot of time in nature. I've just done my Army MLT course, so mountaineering and hiking and other adventurous stuff that's not to do with my sport. Camping and skiing and all that kind of stuff. I like the outdoors.
I love a good quote. Are you someone who goes to a quote for inspiration or for guidance?
So I don't really have lots of quotes that I kind of have on the top of my head, but I've been listening to your podcast and I listened to your one with Victoria and I thought, oh my goodness, that was the quote that I wanted to use, which is, as a female, you can have it all, just not at the same time. And I think it applies to everyone, really. But I mean, I've not gone through the whole being married with kids. I haven't even started on that yet. And that is a whole another thing. I just think it's very true in life, is that I want everything all the time and I want to be great at everything and just do it all at the same time. And my partner's constantly saying, just like, focus on one thing a bit more this year. You've got your whole life ahead of you. You can conquer the other things, you know, in 5 years. And I think it is very true. And for me to go to the Olympics and even make it there, but to make the final, I needed to focus in a bit more on that rather than spreading myself too thinly. So I think that's very true. So that was kind of my number one quote. But my other one was, do not go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path and leave a trail, which I think is kind of a motto that I live by. And I try and do things differently. I've not done things the easy way at all. I've not got to the Olympics in the conventional way that all my colleagues have got there, nor have I going to become a consultant in a conventional way. But I think it makes it more interesting, more fun, and what's life without a little bit of trouble?
We hope being a guest on The Culture Kernel softened Carenza's post-Olympic blues, but undoubtedly her gap year travels will help. What stood out for me was the complexity of adjusting her personality to brilliantly suit the specific needs of army officer, elite athlete, and medical doctor. I loved the advice she had for younger girls. You can do whatever you want, but you have to work hard and consider the sacrifice. I thought her sage reflections about what matters most helps keep her grounded. I'd love to hear what matters most to you. Send me an email at theculturekernel@bfbs.com. Take care until next time.